outside. And all them crazy murderers will never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see no joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. I ain't a tie, can't just see. Open up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
And here we go, folks. It is Monday, September the 22nd, 2025. Year of our Lord Jesus Christ, King of the Gentiles. And you are listening to today's edition of the Ugly Truth broadcast. Welcome to the program, folks. Hope you're all doing well. Those of you of goodwill, as we like to say often on this program, folks, we don't wish our enemies well. And that's actually a topic that we're going to be going into with some degree of heavy discussion, folks, because it's very important that we understand the nature of this battle that we're involved in. You know, as we say often on this program, we don't wish our enemies well, because when you're dealing with an enemy, and notice, folks, there's a difference between your enemies and your competitors. Okay, when you are playing a friendly game of chess with somebody, okay, that's your competitor. Okay, yeah, technically, I guess he's your enemy, you know, in a very friendly sense. But he's just a competitor. He's not going to kill you. Okay, this game of chess that the two of you are playing is not a duel to the death, that whoever loses has to take a bullet to the head. Okay, there's a difference between competitors and enemies. Okay, enemies obviously are people who are out to destroy you. Okay, this isn't a tangent, folks. This is a really important point that we need to pursue because it plays very powerfully into our troubled world right now in which we find ourselves. Anyway, folks, as I said often on this program, if you need a good description of what we're up against when I talk about our enemies, when we talk about our enemies and their plans for us, just go watch any of the Terminator films, okay? You have a binary world, folks. I hate to use that term because it's been used so much in all of these stupid discussions about what's really a man and what's really a woman and all of the rest of that. And it's just a 64-cent word. I think that's the term they use, a 64-cent word or a 25-cent word to try and make an otherwise ridiculous conversation sound more respectable and scientific and scholarly. Okay. But we do live in a binary world, folks. And this binary world wasn't one that we created. Okay. It's a binary world of us versus them, because on the other side of that divide, we do have an enemy that has sworn itself to our destruction thousands of years before any of us were ever born. Ladies and gentlemen, not just within the last few weeks, the last few months or years or decades or even centuries, but thousands of years before any of us were ever born, before we were ever so much as a thought in the mind of our creator. And that's why we do not have the luxury, folks, of engaging in silly discussions. You know, we say often on this program, the people live and die based upon words, based upon what kinds of conversations and discussions are taking place. And we've used as our example for that what happened right after 9/11, 24 years ago. Okay, the discussion, the conversation that was immediately begun was how the Arabs did this to us, Ahab the Arab, the followers of Islam. They did this to us because They hate us for our freedom. They hate us because we're Christians, and they hate Western civilization. And so, because this was the discussion, this was the conversation that was initiated and was not allowed any deviation, folks. You couldn't bring any balance to this. You couldn't bring any context to it and say, well, you know, let's keep in mind, just 10 years ago, we went and murdered about 1 million people over there, and we've been supporting this terrorist enclave over there for the last half century that's murdered and displaced millions of people. We were not allowed to have that discussion. Well, anyway, folks, because of the nature of the discussion that took place, the United States and a large portion of those Western countries that we hold in subservience went with us and just basically blew up the Middle East for the benefit of one group of terrorists who are out to steal the entire cookie jar for themselves. Okay. So it doesn't matter what the political discussion is, folks, whatever the political topic is. It's important that we have the right conversation. You know, this morning I have a teenager who is learning to drive, and I spent this morning taking him down to work. And we were in a hurry. And usually when we head down to work, we'll stop off if we leave early enough, and we'll get a cup of coffee or a donut or something for him to, you know, to juice himself up before he goes and does an 8-hour shift. And we didn't have that luxury this morning because we were late. Okay, so we couldn't take any of these side roads that we usually take. You know, we take this road off here to go into the gas station, to get the coffee, the donuts, whatever. We had to make a beeline straight for work in order to get him there on time so that he wasn't late. Okay. Now, folks, it's the same thing with the pursuit of the truth. The shortest distance between two points is a straight line. Okay. Taking side roads, taking the scenic route, allowing ourselves to be, to be diverted, distracted, whatever, all that it does is prolongs the journey. We get there late. You know what happens when you get there late, folks, in this case? When you're dealing with an enemy that's out to destroy you, when you get there late, meaning you arrive at the truth much later than you would have if you had just stayed on the straight and narrow path, what happens when you arrive late is that your enemy has just taken that knife that he has at your throat, and he has cut both of your, jugular vein and your carotid artery, and that's it. Now, unfortunately, folks, we, the Gentiles, for all of our great character assets, we do have flaws as well, one of which is that we're easily distracted. In the middle of an important thing, an important political event, something that's, I would say, apocalyptically important, such as 9/11, we allow ourselves to get distracted. Now, this has happened many times in the past. Obviously, the great bulk of the Gentiles, at least in the United States, allowed themselves to be distracted and diverted by buying into this notion that the followers of Islam hate us for our freedoms, and they hate us for our Christianity, and they're out to cut off our heads and circumcise our daughters and all the rest of that. A big diversion, folks, a big lie, okay? And because people swallowed that lie, our enemies who pulled this thing off on 9/11, and no, it was not the jihadists, folks, it was the Jew-hadists, okay? The true terrorists of all human history, the followers of Judaism, they are the ones who invented religious and political terrorism. Because we allowed ourselves to be diverted off of the straight and narrow, this horrible thing happened where, as I said, we went to the Middle East and blew it up for the benefit of these people who are intent upon killing all of us. Now, this has happened every time there's been a big thing, folks. There's always been these diversions that have been put out there for public consumption. you know, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time talking or dwelling on it, but the whole business with Sandy Hook, this Sandy Hook massacre, and how we had this entire horde of just mentally deranged people who were out there saying that nothing had happened, no shooting had taken place, nobody died, crisis actors. And then this pattern repeated itself every time there was a copycat event that took place, including the Boston bombing and some of these others, all the way up to the present time, folks, with the political assassination of Charlie Kirk. Okay. We have people out there who are taking a lot of otherwise well-intentioned people down the road to Disasterville. And they're saying that nothing happened. There was no shooting. There was no assassination. Charlie Kirk faked his death. I actually got a few comments from people that said that Charlie Kirk isn't even a real person. Okay, he's just a fictional person. These are all crazy diversions, folks, obviously. But, you know, and they are easy to spot because, you know, you can see him from a mile away. And fortunately, I guess, to some degree, they're not going to get a whole lot of traction. It's the other diversions, folks, that don't sound so crazy that are actually the dangerous ones. And over the course of the last almost 2 weeks since Mr. Kirk was killed, we have seen, you know, the bulk of the alternative media chasing its tail and running after every diversion that is tossed in their path. Now, first of all, folks, I'm going to clear up a few things, or at least try to clear up a few things. First of all, we are joined by our good friend Stas. I'll be bringing him up here in just a moment as soon as I start to get woozy from lack of oxygen because I'm talking so much. First of all, folks, some of these things taking place out there, these discussions saying that that the shooter could not have done what he did without being professionally trained, that this had to have been a professional hit. That's not true, folks. He didn't have to be highly trained. He didn't have to be a sniper. Now, to be fair, folks, I have not been following what a lot of the pundits have been saying about this, but I have seen the titles of some of their videos. And our good friend Stas has been keeping me abreast of who's saying what, since he does keep his ear to the ground on what these folks are talking about at any given moment, whereas I'm not. I don't have the time to invest in listening to dubious analysis on things. But there seems to be a considerable amount of chirping going on out there saying that the whole thing is impossible, that this guy could not have done the shooting, that there was something else going on here, a second shooter. And folks, just right off the bat, let me just say this, okay? I think that there's a lot more to the story involving Charlie Kirk's murder than what we are being told, okay? Just like I said in the aftermath of the Sandy Hook massacre and the aftermath of the Boston Marathon bombing, I'm absolutely sure that there's a lot more to it than what we're being told by official sources. However, folks, I can tell you based upon my own personal firsthand and extensive experience using guns, just like the rifle that this individual, what's his name, Tyler Robinson or something like that, used, that he very easily could have done what he did. Okay. Let's see. Today's the first day of fall, and that's really the unofficial starting day of hunting season across the United States. And within the 50 states, folks, you're going to have tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of people who are going to go out into the woods or wherever it is that they do their hunting with rifles just like the one that was used to murder Charlie Kirk. And with those guns, they are going to harvest. That's the term that hunters use, harvest all sorts of animals, from deer to elk to moose to bear to antelope. And they're going to do it with rifles just like the one said to have been used to kill Charlie Kirk. And some of these people will do it at even greater distances than what we're being told existed between Charlie Kirk and his assassin. Okay. Yes, folks, the guy who has been accused of doing this could very well have done it. Okay. And at this point, we don't have any evidence that says that he didn't do it. You know, I was skeptical in the beginning when I first saw the video that the FBI had released of this guy running across the rooftop, and he obviously did not have his rifle with him, the same rifle that later was found in the woods nearby. But knowing how these bolt action high-powered rifles work, folks, I know that you can break them down with a screwdriver. Okay, usually there are only two takedown screws, one mid-stock and one back by the trigger guard. Usually it's a flathead screw, okay, so you need a flathead screwdriver. And simply by unscrewing those two screws, you can take apart the buttstock from the action, which is the gun part of it, and basically cut it in half in terms of its size, okay? And then you can fit it into a backpack. So he could have done this, folks. He could have done this. It doesn't require a great deal of skill to hit somebody the size of a man from 200 yards away, especially with a scope. Now, the reason I bring this up, folks, is because all of these forensic discussions that seem to be taking place right now that are the rage, maybe there is something to it. Maybe there isn't. None of us are in the position to say definitively, okay? We don't have the kind of smoking gun, no pun intended, with Charlie Kirk's murder that we did with 9/11 involving the arrest of the five Mossad agents that morning who were seen by witnesses filming the destruction and cheering, okay? That's a smoking gun, okay? We don't have a smoking gun in this case, folks. Except that just prior to his murder, Charlie Kirk was obviously having a coming to Jesus moment. He was coming out of his trance, so to speak. He was having second thoughts about the whole American-Israeli thing. You know, I spent the last week or so watching some interviews that Charlie Kirk had done with lots of different people. And he said some really incredible things, folks, including what he had to say about the believability of the October 7th attacks, and that it was virtually impossible that this took Israel by surprise, as we have been told. Okay. If there was one thing he could have said, folks, that was going to put him in the gun sights of Benjamin Netanyahu, it was that. Now, in addition to that, folks, I think, and I'm confident in saying what I'm about to say, I think that Charlie Kirk was being deprogrammed by people such as Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens and Megyn Kelly, and even, yes, folks, the President of the United States. I think that they were all talking to him and saying, look, Charlie, you know, you need to check back into the hotel reality here, okay? You have to remember, as a Christian, what we're talking about here. We're talking about the people, the haters of Jesus Christ, okay? Not the people who hated Jesus Christ 2,000 years ago to the point where they brought about his murder, but the haters of Jesus Christ, the people who to this day hate Jesus Christ, okay? the people who to this day have created all sorts of social and political viruses that have been designed to just completely destroy true Christian civilization. One of those viruses being the cultural Marxism that had infected the guy who pulled the trigger at that event down in Utah. Okay. So I think that these people, Tucker Carlson, Candace Owens, Megyn Kelly, and yes, folks, the president, they were having conversations with Charlie Kirk, and they were saying, look, we have a problem here, okay? We need to jettison this notion that there's this thing known as Judeo-Christian civilization, that there is this friendship that exists between Christians and Jews and between Christianity and Judaism. Okay. Jesus described these people as children of their father, the devil. He told his followers, I send you out as sheep amidst the wolves. Okay. It can't get any clearer than that. And so I think that these conversations that he was having with these very important and powerful people who have really gotten under the lizard skin of the Jews these days. All you have to do is read any right-wing Israeli or left-wing Israeli website on any given day, and Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens and others, you know, they're being raked over the coals, accused of all of the usual business, Hitler, Nazis, anti-Semites, blah, blah, blah. So, folks, that's the only real smoking gun that we have in all of this, is that Charlie Kirk was he was falling out of love. The love potion was wearing off. The magic spell was wearing off, and he was starting to make noises that the Jews considered to be very problematic. Okay. Don't forget, folks, that a year from now, we are going to be up to our eyebrows here in the U.S. With midterm elections, okay? And those young people who, you know, are part of Charlie Kirk's organization, they are going to be very, very important in steering the midterms in one direction or the other, okay? In killing Charlie Kirk, folks, what they are basically doing is that they are setting up Donald Trump to be removed from office so that via the mechanism of flipping Congress and handing it back into the hands of Benjamin Netanyahu. Now, I know a lot of you out there, folks, who follow a lot of the nonsense that, you know, you'll run into on various podcasts and whatever, you say, oh, no, well, Netanyahu already owns Congress. No, folks, no, he did own Congress until the president was reelected. Now, it's a very, very close thing. It doesn't take much, a dozen seats from the House and a dozen seats from the Senate. And yes, it would be back in Netanyahu's hands. And then Netanyahu would do what he did during the first term, which is to mobilize Congress to impeach Donald Trump. And this time to convict him. Okay. So again, folks, I know we're kind of wandering all over the place here. But what I'm telling you and what I'm assuming and hoping that my guest host, who I will be bringing up here in just a matter of seconds, is going to say is that we need to stay focused on what we know. Okay. And all of this chirping and chattering that's taking place about how this guy couldn't have done the shooting and, you know, there's a big cover up here. Well, maybe there is, folks. Maybe there is. You know, I would be interested in knowing who this guy's friends are. Okay. You know, there was discussion made of him being on Discord or whatever, one of these chat rooms. Who were these people? Who was he in contact with? Was somebody pushing him to do this? Because you know, folks, that the Jews have got their people in chat rooms like this all over the place. They're always there looking for somebody that can be exploited, somebody that can be pushed into doing something that works in their favor. Okay? But this notion, folks, that no shooting happened. Yes, folks, I've actually had to, refute this with a couple of longtime readers, longtime followers of what we do here, to steer them away from some of these nutcases who are saying that no shooting happened, crisis act, not the whole repeat of the Sandy Hook nuttiness, folks. The notion that it didn't happen or that it couldn't have happened is simply isn't true. Like I said, today is unofficially the first day of hunting season, and there will be thousands, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of deer and elk and moose, bear, and all the rest of them that are going to be killed using guns just like the one that was used, being fired by people who might take that gun out once or twice before hunting season to make sure that it's still sighted in, but they're certainly not, you know, they're not a member of the SEALs or a Marine sniper or anything like that. And at distances two or even three times as far as the distance said to have existed between Charlie Kirk and his shooter, they're going to shoot these animals. Okay. And so what I'm saying here, folks, is don't allow yourself to be distracted. The conversation that we should be having right now is that the one person who stood to gain from this, the one group of people who stood the most to gain from this, was Benjamin Netanyahu and the Jews. Okay. Because they cannot afford to have this organization that up until this point has been firmly within their grasp and within their control to fall out of their control. Okay. That's the conversation that we should be having, folks. Not whether or not there was one shooter or two shooters or whether the guy couldn't have done the shooting. All of that is just, it's like I said before, folks, the straightest line between two, or the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. And if you take these side roads, it's going to take you longer to get where you need to go. Anyway, having said that, folks, I'm going to give all of your ears a rest from my voice. We're going to bring up Stas, and we're going to pick his brain for a few of his comments that he undoubtedly has over what was that rather long introduction. Stas, are you with us? Stas?
Oh, yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, yeah. I can hear you. You sound just like this guy I know. His name is Stas.
Yes. Excellent introduction with a good warning. Okay. People that they probably won't pay attention to get
no they won't
with the details of the shooting, people looking at it being fascinated. I definitely kind of pin it down to the distraction guy, Mr. George Zinn. I find that kind of a smoking gun.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, that's the other thing in this. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Like I said, Stas, I think that there's a lot that we don't know about this. Okay. But to take that lot that we don't know and to say that it either didn't happen or to go off on these tangents that, really only, I mean, let's just face it, you know, folks, again, sorry to interrupt you, Stas, but I wanted to get this one thought in before I forget it. You know, supposedly there's this thing known as remote viewing. Okay. Where, people are able to you know, get themselves into this hypnotic state and they can look into the future and go to place, the bi-locate, go to places that, you know, it's impossible for them to be at because you can only be in one place at one time. Well, one of the things that I do, folks, when I am trying to figure something out is I try to do this remote viewing where I imagine myself in the room, invisibly in the room, where Netanyahu and Smotrich and Ben-Gvir and all of these other insane, apocalyptically minded Jews are, and they're strategizing, okay? And they're talking about, like, just for example, Charlie Kirk, And I can hear one of them saying, you know, we need to generate more talk out there about how this was a hoax. We need to generate more talk out there about how it was impossible for this guy to do the shooting. We need to keep people away from the topic of how Charlie Kirk was having second thoughts about Israel. Because if people are allowed to go down that road, then other troubling and problematic topics are going to come up. Okay, meaning if we continue, if we allow this discussion of Charlie falling out of favor with Israel, and that maybe Israel had something to do with his death, if we allow that conversation to continue, then pretty soon they're going to be talking about JFK. They're going to be talking about RFK. They're going to be talking about the USS Liberty. They're going to be talking about Oklahoma City. They're going to be talking about 9/11, the anthrax attacks, COVID. Okay, so I imagine myself in the room as they are strategizing and how there's somebody there jotting something down as they're saying, you know, tell our people out there in the alternative media to ramp up the hoax discussions, ramp up the forensics discussions about how this guy couldn't have done the shooting, ramp up this and ramp up that. That's how they do it, folks. You know, they don't just have to go in and say, stop talking about this. They just change the subject. And so that's at least how I do it when I am trying to figure out what's the best course of action in dealing with this tsunami, this tidal wave of misinformation and disinformation, is I try to think how our enemies think. Stas, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead with your thought.
No, that's all right. So the most interesting aspect is that Benjamin Netanyahu himself has come out and now a number of times he's saying we don't have anything to do with it, which is very odd.
Yeah.
I'm even wondering
if he didn't do that after 9/11. Yeah. He didn't do that after 9/11. He didn't come out and say Israel didn't have anything to do with it. He didn't do it after COVID. He didn't come out and say, hey, you know, there are all kinds of rumors out there that Israel developed COVID and that Israel was involved in the theft of the 2020 election and that Israel was involved in the events of January 6th. He didn't do that for those folks, but he's doing it with Charlie Kirk. Why do you think that is, Stas?
I think he probably knows that some key figures, political pundits and commentators.
Yep. Yep.
We're going to come at it go at it. And there's some significant people. Obviously Candace Owens is going at it. Tucker Carlson.
Yep. Everybody in the alternative media.
Everybody
of everybody of any consequence with a large audience is discussing this angle of Charlie Kirk in Israel and falling out of favor, and it's not going away. This obviously has the Jews nervous.
It's out there. Even some of the left have noticed.
Yeah.
And I've been surprised some people that I'm familiar with on the left have said things like, I don't like her, but I like how Marjorie Taylor Greene has come out and said some things. So they're watching it. There's a famous comedian named Tim Dillon that's big that won't let go of it. Mm-hmm. In fact, he's even challenged Joe Rogan to say, no. Jeffrey Epstein is a Mossad operation.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't let the guy off the hook. So it is out there, and you know whether they admit it or not. There's a lot of people that are getting more and more upset about the murders in Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of progressives. Jimmy Dore won't let go of it. I think what the problem is, it's not a unified front like the Jadeo Masters, but it's out there. And definitely a problem. and the tragedy behind Charlie Kirk may have saved the president.
In yes. sense,
because they were going at him with the Epstein files mm-hmm. because he had to abruptly change course and squelch it. So there was a promise in the real world and in the conspiracy world and even in the alt conspiracy world that the files were going to be released and people would be freaked out. It would lead to arrests and all type of things. And then all of a sudden, the president had to stop it. But nobody really talked about why he would do such a thing to his friends, why he would basically nearly destroy his own presidency, that he was hit with something, a threat, not even just blackmail, maybe nuclear attack, and that he warned the people of Tehran. So people are forgetting, you got to look at the whole picture. There was the signal gate, which he attempted to take down his intelligence team. There was the wild attack of technological attack with the pagers on what people, fundamentalist Christians, would say the evil Hezbollah, and other people would say just people trying to defend people in a genocide, you know, the names. Sorry if I'm going too far from, but the other people get freaked out by these names. It's people trying to help these people. And then the Rising Lion attack, which is very technological, that, you know, went forward really without the president's blessing, although he has to, what people have to understand is he has to fake that he's all on board with this. It's incredible. So people in the alternative truth movement and the Alex Jones general truth movement, maybe they're, you know, or they're all saying of how all powerful the enemies are. There's all type of Rothschild power and this and that. And then when the president just doesn't do exactly what they want and the way they want it, they get upset.
You know, well, they don't just get upset, Stas. They don't just get upset. They take it. They do exactly what the Jews and Netanyahu need them to do. Like, for example, what you just said about Epstein. Okay. As soon as the president, through his attorney general, announced that the Epstein thing was closed, nothing to see here, move on. You know, at the very same moment that Netanyahu is in town and Trump announced ahead of time that he was going to be very firm, that was the term that he used, very firm, with Netanyahu about ending the war in Gaza. And then all of a sudden, the president is forced to do this thing to throw a grenade within his own foxhole by announcing that the whole Epstein thing was closed. And, you know, all of the people who are only about as smart as they imagine themselves being by half, and that's being very generous, all of a sudden they're saying, oh my God, he's on the list. He's on the list. He's covering it up for himself. No, folks, it was much worse than just that. This is something that Stas and I will be covering in a program that we'll be doing very soon. But nevertheless, everybody went down that road that Benjamin Netanyahu needed them to go down, which was to make these assumptions that Trump is deep-sixing the Epstein thing because he's on the list. And that wasn't it at all, folks. Okay. That's something that we'll go into later. But Stas, returning to something that you just said here about Charlie Kirk and how there are key people going all the way up to the president, I believe, who are feeding this discussion about Israel's involvement in it. Okay. As I said, we mentioned Tucker Carlson. We mentioned Candace Owens. You mentioned Marjorie Taylor Greene. And yes, folks, the president himself, if he's, whether he's picking up the phone and having conversations with these powerful voices like Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens, or whether he's doing it through one of his intermediaries, he's telling them, keep that discussion going. Okay. We need this kind of political pressure to be put on Netanyahu because right now, he's got me pinned to the floor over this Epstein thing. And we need to build this discussion up about Israel possibly being involved in the murder of Charlie Kirk. Okay. So, and on that note, folks, I'm going to play a very interesting and what I think is a very important soundbite. And it is of the president at the memorial that took place yesterday in Arizona for Charlie Kirk. And he said something that really was quite extraordinary, folks. We're going to analyze what all of that means after we give it a listen. So let's just give it a listen. Hold on, folks. Here we go.
But through it all, the core of Charlie's message and his basic method never changed. It never really changed. He stayed the same person also. At every campus event, Charlie asked the people who disagreed with him to come forward, and instead of silencing them, he handed them a microphone and let them speak. And he'd convinced so many of them. It was a pretty amazing thing to watch, actually. Shortly before Charlie arrived on campus, the day he was assassinated, a staff member texted him that there were many critics and students who were opposed to his views, and rather strenuously in the crowd. And that actually made him feel good, because he wanted to convince them. He understood. He really did. He understood what was right. And he was right about that. A lot of it was based on common sense, by the way. Charlie wrote back to the staff member saying, "I'm not here to fight them. I want to know them and love them. And I want to reach them and try and lead them into a great way of life in our country." In that private moment on his dying day, we find everything we need to know about who Charlie Kirk truly was. He was a missionary with a noble spirit and a great, great purpose. He did not hate his opponents. He wanted the best for them. That's where I disagreed with Charlie. I hate my opponent, and I don't want the best for them. I'm sorry. I am sorry, Erica. But now Erica can talk to me and the whole group, and maybe they can convince me that that's not right, but I can't stand my opponent.
Okay, folks, so that was the President of the United States, Donald Trump, speaking at the memorial yesterday held for Mr. Kirk. And I guess his comments followed those of Charlie Kirk's wife, who said that she forgives the nutcase who murdered her husband and made her two children fatherless. And the president came out and said this thing, folks. And I, as it is with all things, when the president hears the microphone, he's not gratuitous, folks. Everything he says is the equivalent of political capital. Okay. He doesn't just throw things out there the way that somebody would take $100 bills and just throw them out into the street. He's very careful. He's very calculated about the things that he says. Every word that comes out of his mouth, folks, is an investment in something. He says it because he intends to get some type of a return on it. Now, when he said this, he said, "This is where I disagree. I hate my opponents." Notice that, folks. He didn't say my opponents, and it's obvious that President Trump has lots of opponents, plural. He said, "I hate my opponents," singular. And he used that particular word twice. Stas, you get the right answer, you get $1,000 in Monopoly money. Who is the opponent that Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, is referencing in that speech?
That would be Benjamin Netanyahu.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He didn't say Benjamin Netanyahu, though, Stas. So how do we know this?
Because he used a singular.
Okay, but he could have been talking about Adam Schiff. He could have been talking about Nancy Pelosi. He could have been talking about Jimmy Kimmel.
I think he's talking about the guy who killed Kirk himself.
Yes. Yes. The guy who killed Kirk, the guy who is running the entire operation to destroy not just America, but the entire world. Through war, through cultural Marxism, through wokeism, through trans, through all of these things. You know, you have the overt world war and then you have the covert war. And the one guy who is at the head of all of it is Benjamin Netanyahu. Now, I know that's going to upset a lot of you people out there who think that it's the Illuminati and it's the Jesuits and it's the Black Pope. And the bad news, folks, is that, yes, it is Benjamin Netanyahu. Benjamin Netanyahu right now is the one man who is standing in the way of the president pulling the lit fuse out of this apocalyptic bomb known as World War III and Armageddon. So you're absolutely correct, Stas. He is, in a very calculated way, he is, by saying the word opponent, he is saying that Netanyahu had Charlie Kirk murdered. But it's actually much bigger than that. Okay, Netanyahu is trying to murder all of us. Now, folks, this is where things are going to get a little bit hairy. Okay, we're going to talk about, excuse me, we're going to talk about philosophy and religion here. You know, two topics that we do not, from which we do not shy away on this program, because they're at the heart of everything. If you don't understand philosophy, if you don't understand religion, you don't understand the way people think, then you're not going to understand why they do the things that they do. Okay. This is going to be somewhat controversial. I'm sure that we will lose many listeners over this who will say that we have abandoned the teachings of Jesus Christ and all of the rest of that. But just hear us out. First of all, I think it's not just that the president is pointing this finger in a very oblique, is that the word? I don't know. I'm drawing a blank right now. In a very, well, I'll just say oblique for lack of a better word. I'll have to look it up and see if it's the right word. That he's pointing this finger towards Netanyahu by saying opponent. Okay. I think it's more than just that, folks. I think that he's trying to have a conversation with the American people where he's trying to tell them that they're in more danger than they have ever been in their entire lives. And that all of this talk about turn the other cheek and love thy enemy, do not resist an evil man, and all of the rest of that, that there is no place for this kind of talk right now. We are locked in a cage with this alligator the size of Godzilla. And all of these nice platitudes that people, particularly Christians, like to toss around saying, love thy neighbor, turn the other cheek, do not resist an evil man, all the rest of that. I think what he's saying, folks, is look, forget all of that. Okay, that's not the mindset that we need to have right now. We are in the fight of our lives, and we cannot allow ourselves to be watered down and weighed down with, you know, these kinds of philosophical and religious ideas whereby we don't stand up and fight to the death in order to save ourselves. What happened to Charlie Kirk, folks, is going to be happening all over the place very soon. Anybody out there who is out front and center with a website, with a podcast, going and giving speeches or whatever, they are on the list of people to be eliminated, including yours truly, folks. Okay, I actually had a conversation with a good friend of mine the other day, and I said, you know, I'm not a betting man because I never have any money to bet. But if I had money to bet, my prediction would be that I would lose my life in a violent action, meaning that somebody is going to kill me for the things that I've done and the things that I do now, the things that I say, the incendiary and truthful things that I say about the most dangerous people in human history. Okay. So yes, folks, I fully expect that, I am on the list as well as many of you out there. You know, don't think for a second that there isn't some type of electronic fingerprint somewhere, and that somebody doesn't know that you visit certain websites and you listen to certain podcasts and read certain, articles, whatever. What happened to Charlie Kirk, folks, is going to happen to a lot of people. A lot of people. You know, these leftists, like the one who murdered Kirk, you know, they are Benjamin Netanyahu's version of ISIS here in America. You know that ISIS, they were these insane people who claimed to be followers of Islam, even though they weren't. And they were just these wild animals were set loose in the Middle East, and they went on this path of destruction and carnage in order to destabilize everything. That's what they're going to do here, folks, except they're not using ISIS. They're using the left. And I think that the president is telling us, look, okay, none of your drill sergeants, if you ever joined up in the military, none of them ever said to you, go out and bless your enemy, love your enemy, turn the other cheek, do not resist an evil man. Okay? You can't do this, folks. You can't do this if you expect to live. When you have somebody who is out to destroy you, again, we're not talking about somebody that you're sitting down and having a game of chess, playing a game of chess or checkers with, okay? Then you have a competitor. You're not talking about an enemy that's out to destroy you, to end your life, okay? And so I think that the conversation that the president was trying to have with the American people is, look, leave that business, turn the other cheek. Okay, that's for within families. That's for between friends. That's between people who are both of goodwill. Both sides are of goodwill. But maybe they just had a squabble over something. Okay, somebody borrowed somebody's hammer and didn't bring it back, or, you know, paid back a loan later than they should have and it was less than it should have been. Not now, folks. We're talking about people who are institutionally dedicated to our utter destruction. And I think that this is the conversation that the president was trying to have with the American people when he said this, when he said, I don't believe in loving your enemies. I don't believe in turning the other cheek. I hate my opponent. Stas, your thoughts?
I think the president is getting people ready every time.
Yes, yes, yes.
So he's saying this. That he gives little lessons. You know, he has been pictured with the Bible himself and has a huge Christian following, but once in a while he just drops a curse word to wake people up, like, this is it, you know, quit fooling around. Yeah. And also
quit effing around.
Exactly. He says, I'm sure that, like, woo, but I mean, he's like, this isn't a game here. You know, you're anything could happen. A revolution, a civil war, which is already really sort of started every day. And World War III is afoot. It's just a different time with different kind of technology and a different society. So it's being fought right now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in it. And, you know, just as there's an outrage war where the left and right will claim people as their own or just say strange statements, and everybody is now their own TV program with their social media, and they're going back and forth. And Trump knows this. He's, you know, his detractors are like, oh, he doesn't read books and this and that. He's always watching TV. Of course he is, because he's weighing what they're saying, and that's the number one thing. What Absolutely. These platforms are saying, and you know, that's why there was outrage when Musk got a hold of the Twitter and changed it to X, and now Larry Ellison wants TikTok. So it's a war, you know, I've caught people every time they watch, I don't know what else to call them, conspiracy shows and things, that there's these people that mysteriously lead the Gentiles to go after Gentiles. So like, oh my gosh, Elon Musk, where is he going? You know, I'm constantly berating people. Knock it off. You know, that's a Gentile. We'll see which direction it goes. Or they're after Trump all the time. Trump, Trump, Trump. Hardly ever do they criticize Netanyahu. But slowly people are getting educated to these things, that routinely now popular influencers like Candace Owens and even Tucker Carlson, they're bringing up the Mossad, something that was unknown to every American family not long ago.
Absolutely. Yes.
What's the name of the Israeli intelligence? I think people for a long time thought they're a small country. Thank God America comes to their aid and whatnot. And, you know, you could make a strong argument that they are the most powerful country and not even the United States.
Yes.
Cause we're like an attack dog, a golem for them. And that'd be hard to beat. I'd be willing to take on anybody with that. Oh yeah. The United States is the most powerful. Well, I don't know about, you know, there's political, dominance of pretty much every country in the world, and the United States is included in that. So everybody's like, whoa, Ukraine, they're so unlucky, or Nicaragua, they're so unlucky, they're toppled. Well, we got a revolution going on here, and the president is walking a tightrope all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Charlie Kirk had a youthful following that a lot of people are talking about, and then came the question, who's going to wrest control of the minds of these kids? And they now have footage and sound bites that Charlie Kirk was questioning these things that you had mentioned. He questions the October 7th narrative. I've been to Israel. It's small. Why did it take them so long to respond? And finally, just hours almost before his death, he's in a Ben Shapiro, these things subtly, as anybody could. You know, you can't just get on and go say derogatory things to Shapiro. But we know he wants to. And there's talk that he was afraid of Israel, that he was bankrolled by them, that they wanted him to come back in the fold. And this is a common people in America. And I assume Europe, that if you're a person of talent, they may seek you out. And if you don't take it up, it might be better than actually making the money, because you'll be working for them. And I think he found himself trapped. I think Owens, interestingly enough, he used to be on with Ben Shapiro. She broke the contact, and it was, you know, it reached reverberation. So, but with all these things, you know, America is, even though this is new immigrants for years and decades, it's above all a Puritan Jewish country at its core. Although the founding fathers, you go to details, they didn't really like it. And that's why they push Alexander Hamilton. And I'm really going off base here, but Jefferson. So it plays into this. And I think for a long time, Donald Trump knows this thing in his own way. And, you know, he stayed on the sidelines, and, you know, he's a businessman. I think he made a determination that he couldn't beat Barack Obama, his cult of personality, but he knows this is a problem. He's had contact with Richard Nixon and his wife. And you know what they're really talking about when they get together, how to deal with Israel. It's the curse of every president. So they may every day be talking about, you know, well, we, you know, taxes and spending and bureaucratic stuff and battles between the left and right. But behind the scenes, this is what they really deal with for every president for a long time. And even ones that you've mentioned on the left, that Bill Clinton, not a great guy, had trouble with Israel, you know. And the Epstein operation is extensive. And as we talked about on and off here, it's likely that he used this leverage, because this is a battle of leverage and media and emotions and feelings. And to get really weird, like some kind of occult magic stuff. Weird things that has obviously taken hold on people in this country. You talk to people, why do you hate Trump? They really can't really tell you, not to mimic everybody who's talking about. You ask them why. Even if you tell them, they also hate Russia for some reason. Half the country's blaming their problems on that. And you ask people, just put that all aside. Aren't you worried about being annihilated in nuclear war? You know, what do you think it can't happen? And these themes play themselves out all the time. People can't stick to the point. What happened to Charlie Kirk? Who was the prime mover? Who benefited? I mean, really, they look at footage and like, what are you, an expert in disguises, ballistics? Are you an assassin? And worse than that, like we talked about, some guys who have this skill, like snipers, they're tempted to come on and make money and go, look, this shot, it's a cold battle shot. He'd be nervous. He couldn't make it. Now, you know about this thing. You said that's simply not true. Any guy could make it, you know, it's a practice, you know.
Yeah.
Worst of that is, we don't know how they did it, and we can't go into it too much, because by the time we figure that out next week, one of these other persons is assassinated. We're already forgetting Charles Kirk.
Exactly. Don't forget Stas.
Yep.
The discussion involving him falling out of favor with Netanyahu in Israel. Now, that conversation has just died. And that's the conversation. By the way, your comments just now were brilliant. Everything that you just said for the last 5 minutes were brilliant. Go ahead and finish your thought before I jump in with something.
Get an idea of how hard it is to figure out what a professional team was before the revelations of Michael Piper's book. I can tell you, whether people believe me or not, I've talked to all kinds of people that very high up in military and intelligence and not exactly media people. Nobody really figured that out. And admit it, people, it's really hard. Did you know who did it? Was it the mob or whatever? The Freemasons, some people even like oil company owners, CIA is the big culprit. Admit it, you didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Really, you know, who benefited for that? Who could have pulled it up? It was pulled together in the open by Mike Piper. And you can see there was other books and stuff that followed up on it. So, you know, it just wasn't known. It was just so libraries full of all this books that distracted people. Like, I know the truth. And, oh, they shot from the drain pipe. No, you don't. No, you don't. You know. You don't really
Those are all the conversations that the Jews want us to have.
Yes.
The conversation that they don't want everybody to have is that Israel was the one who pulled it off.
Yes.
And so the point that we're making here, folks, is that it's very easy to get caught up in the flood of discussion. You know, I've been getting people sending me stuff. Oh, you know, you got to watch this. You got to listen to this, you know, and it's all of this stuff that is taking the focus away from Charlie Kirk and his relationship with Israel. Okay. and how it, you know, that there were drastic changes taking place. And more than likely, folks, this is just our personal theory here, that this was something that it wasn't just a an organic thing, okay, but rather was being pushed along by powerful people. It was a tug of war between Netanyahu and Donald Trump. And Netanyahu saw that Donald Trump was beginning to pull Kirk more over the center line here towards towards Trump's position, and that's the reason why Netanyahu put this thing together. Now, folks, we're not going to get into the forensics of how this may have happened, other than what I talked about before, which is I would like to know who this guy was friends with. Who was he talking to on Discord, I think is what it's called. Was there somebody in that group that nobody really knew who was pretending to be pro-trans and anti-Christian, anti-conservative, all the rest of that, and that this person was pushing him to do this the way that they do all over the internet, folks, in all of these kinds of chat rooms and stuff. Okay, everybody thinks that that Israel's misinformation and disinformation campaign is just limited to going into leaving comments on websites that are pro-Israel. It's much more detailed, much more diabolical than that, folks. They'll go into these chat rooms where they know that there are troubled people, people who can be emotionally exploited and talked into doing something, okay? And they'll push them. They will push them to do these things. So, and this is something that I wanted to, I've been thinking about it ever since the last program that we did, folks. This issue of grooming, okay? Now, that particular term has a very specific meaning to it. Generally, it means, you know, when a predator, a sexual predator, gets hold of a young person and, you know, plays with them psychologically, okay? They befriend them, they get them to trust them, and they play on the emotional and psychological weaknesses of this person, this child, in order to prepare them for some type of sexual abuse. Okay. Well, folks, the term grooming, even though it is really only understood to encompass that, there's an entire alphabet of ways in which people are groomed and ways in which that term grooming can be defined. Okay. Every time we log on to listen to some program, listen to somebody's opinion, every time we read an article, okay, you know, the person who put this together, they did this just as Saz and I are right now. They did this just like a lawyer does in a courtroom in front of a jury. That lawyer's job is to get into that jury's brain, members of that jury, and to make them see things in such a way that's going to result in the lawyer winning this case. Okay. Now, unfortunately, folks, this business of grooming, okay, of psychological manipulation of people, it's not just something that involves children being groomed for sexual purposes. Okay. All of you out there who right now have bought into this notion that nothing happened, that there was no shooter. Charlie Kirk was a crisis actor who faked his own death. Isn't that okay? You have been groomed. Okay, wherever you ran into this information. Okay, maybe it's just some nutcase. Maybe it's not, folks. Maybe it's a guy working for Israeli intelligence, whose job is to flood the discussion with diversions and contradictions and unprovables in order to get everybody to take these side roads instead of taking the straight route to where they need to get. Okay. We are being groomed all the time, folks, all the time. There are groomers everywhere of every conceivable species. And they're constantly flooding the discussion area with things to take our mind off of where it should be. Okay. Now, we could spend the next hour going down the list of all of the most dangerous groomers that are out there, okay, with their rather large podcasts and rather large followers, numbers of followers, and the goofiness that they put out there for people to chew on that just leaves people dazed and confused. They don't know what to think. Okay. And now all of a sudden, instead of talking about this tug of war that exists between Trump and Netanyahu, Trump's opponent, okay, now they're talking about, I don't know, take your pick. I mean, Stas, you're more in tune with what's going on out there than I am. Have they brought space aliens into this discussion involving Kirk yet?
I have not heard the aliens, but it's a reoccurring theme that just goes into over-sophistication movie-like themes like Trump faked his shooting, and this is fake, and everything is fake. Everybody's an expert. I usually think it comes closer to the truth as possible. They have said that Tyler Robinson is a really intelligent kid or whatever. But mm-hmm. I mean, where, you know, whatever might have happened to him, who knows if it's just general grooming or really did the feds fool him himself, mm-hmm. unfriendly ones mm-hmm. to authorities unfriendly to Trump, deep staters, or actual, intelligence people, Mossad operatives. They say he's smart, but nobody is as smart as them. When a professional handles you, you will get beaten and you will probably do what they want you to do.
Yep.
It's kind of a weird thing, but there's an actress that was dating Anthony Bourdain or whatever, and she had been in the Weinstein case. And the Black Cube guy, people asked to see her. I don't know if this point is on point, but this one used as an example. And the chef fellow said, do not go meet them. And then he wound up committing suicide. I don't know if it was related to that, but my point is the guy knew enough, like, don't go near them. You know, they're going to manipulate the situation. They'll wound up getting you in trouble. And I think that even happened to her. That might not be the best example, but it's just she had a brush.
No, actually, it's a perfect example. You just said something that I think very few people understand, which is how well-trained intelligence officers are, how they know how to manipulate people. They know how to get people to do things, bad things, okay, that they otherwise would not do. And you brought this up. Just very, you know, I should have looked it up obliquely. After I get done, I'm going to find out it's not the right adjective or adverb. But what you obliquely referenced before when you talked about black magic. Okay. Anybody who thinks that all of these things that are taking place in the world, that it's just people making decisions about things, and that there isn't this other darker element that is involved in it, this unseeable element, folks. It just simply isn't true, okay? There are some people who they have devoted themselves to furthering the interests of the dark side. And they have, in the process of doing this, they have acquired unto themselves abilities that normal people like you and I would never even imagine being possible, okay? Where they can crawl into somebody's head like this guy who shot Kirk and, you know, with just a few well-placed words, some compliments, some flattery, you know, hey, you know, show us, you know, start the revolution. Let this be the shot heard round the world, okay? And all of a sudden, this kid finds himself on top of a roof with a rifle because whoever was on the other end of that knew exactly what to say in order to get him to do this. So, yes, Stas, what you just said is absolutely true, that these people are highly skilled, and not just in the use of words, but that they are able to tap into very dark and dangerous energies. And I think that this is the point, one of the points that the president was trying to make in the speech, that we are in the fight of our lives. Do not waste any time with any of this church talk about turning the other cheek, loving thy enemy. Whatever. Can you imagine, folks? We don't need an answer because we already know what it is. But can you imagine? Again, we're doing this remote viewing thing. We're in the room with Netanyahu and Smotrich and Ben-Gvir and some of these other horrible Jews. And they're watching the speech given by Charlie Kirk's widow. And she says, I forgive him, meaning her husband's killer. The reaction in that room on the part of Netanyahu and the rest of them, how they were just rolling their eyes, laughing, slapping their knees and saying, these stupid goy, these stupid Gentiles, you know, it's a done deal. We can't lose it. Not when they embrace things like this. And this is what the president, he knew. He knew what the reaction was going to be in Netanyahu's office to that statement. And I'm not picking on her, folks. Believe me, I understand, you know, that, you know, this is grace under pressure on her part. Okay. And she's trying to show that we, the Christians, the Gentiles, we are the better people. Okay. But I'm sure that the president probably in the back of his mind was thinking, that SOB Netanyahu is in there laughing his ass off right now at this poor woman whose husband he just killed. And so I think that, again, folks, this is my remote viewing, but I think that this is this played into why the president said what he did. Stas, we said, we agreed we were only going to go for about 45 minutes, and we have, as usual, gone way past that. What do you want to add to this before we close the book on this, what has been a very interesting, I think, and informative conversation?
It's excellent. As usual, the ugly truth gets to the point. Anybody listening, just realize this is for real. The chances that any resistance to what these people, in quotes, unquote, want is unlikely to succeed, probably. By that, I mean these shows that are saying the BRICS are rising, the global south, the resistance is strong. You know, the real resistance, whether they like it or not, is the president, you know.
Yeah.
Because without him, I think, you know, they're going to go fast. You know,
yeah.
I think even, you know, they're like a lot of these pundits have said, oh, Israel needs the United States. They're falling, whatever. I think they can with, you know, not even that much difficulty, they could topple Iran and start.
They could incinerate the entire world.
Yeah, to get to the bottom.
They don't.
Of it, right.
Yeah. They don't need us for anything. They don't. They have enough death and destruction at their disposal, whether it's nukes, whether it's biological weapons, whether it's a cyber attack that shuts down everything, okay? No running water, no food, no electricity, okay? They could incinerate and obliterate the entire planet. They don't need us for anything. And what you said before about all of this bravado that's out there. And folks, you know, just for the record, we were absolutely aligned with the resistance, okay? But you know, you don't win battles and you don't win wars by beating your chest and talking tough. Okay. And all of this talk about BRICS, the global South, resistance and all of the rest of that. Yes, they're strong in their devotion. But again, you're talking about, I hate to use this terminology. No, I'm not even going to use it. You know, all of you out there know where I was going with it, but I'm not going to say it. It's like a mouse fighting a gorilla. Okay. The Jews are on top of us. All right. They are the woman riding the beast described in the book of the Apocalypse. Okay. They are the woman, the scarlet woman who is drunk on the blood of the saints. And this beast that they have raised up, folks, that they have spent thousands of years raising up, is almost impossible to defeat. And so we have to take that into account as we move forward in this battle, that we want to make sure, folks, that we don't get groomed by the wrong people, that we don't get talked into believing in things that are not as close as we have been led to believe they are. Stas, this was a brilliant discussion. I say,
as usual, you're the only one to bring up that the actual biblical narrative contains within it several references to modern day nuclear war scenarios right there. I don't know anybody else who's talked about it, honestly, at all.
I don't either. It's really depressing. It really is.
Yeah.
It's really depressing. I feel like the character that what's his name, Kevin Costner, played in the Field of Dreams, where he heard this voice, you know, if you build it, it will come. And nobody could hear the voice but him. And then he does this crazy thing of plowing over his cornfield in order to build a ball diamond, and the poor wife. If that's not the depiction of my poor wife, I can't think of a better example that exists. Where, you know, she sees, you know, her husband is going crazy because of a vision that he has. But there's no talking him out of it. And then in the end, he winds up being proven correct. You know, this ball field and all these dead ball players come back. And yeah, it was a good movie, actually, folks. You know, you don't hear us often praising anything, any of the filth that comes out of Hollywood, but that actually was a pretty good movie. I'm betting that the story was written by a gentleman. Anyway, that's it for today, folks. Hopefully we will be back here by this weekend talking about Epstein, folks. We actually did a program the other day and on that topic of Epstein. But Stas, as usual, was great. Yours truly was not. I was not happy with my contribution, and therefore we didn't go with hosting the program. But the Epstein thing, folks, is much worse, much more detailed than what you have been groomed to think that it is. It's not just about Donald Trump being on a list. It's about the Jews putting him in jail by seeing him impeached and convicted so that they can move forward with their plans for killing all of us. Anyway, Stas, unless you had something else to say, we're going to go ahead and say goodbye to the folks. But if you have something, okay, good deal. All right. Well, that's it.
Stay realistic. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's it. Yes, absolutely. Yep. So that's it for today, folks. Until we meet again, thank you for your time. Thank you for your patience. Thank you for your consideration. Please consider contributing something to the costs, to help defray the cost of putting these programs together. And again, folks, we have to be, as Jesus himself said, we will be held to account for every idle word, meaning every little thing that we do is either going to, it's either going to add to our salvation or it is going to add to our destruction. So let us be careful about what kinds of words that we use out there, because again, as we said earlier, we all live and die based upon words.